Yes, hello folks, welcome to the Weekly Global Football Show. I'm your host as always, Phil Brad, joined by my regular co-host, Axon Zach Roy. We hope you enjoyed our podcast on Friday. With Ollie Kerr, it's been exceptionally well downloaded. If you haven't had a chance, go ahead and check that out. We spent an hour with Ollie taking a look at everything that was going on in the Premier League. Of course, lots of action this weekend. During this weekend, of course, we saw a tremendous battle for the Champions League taking place, where Liverpool have now put themselves firmly in the picture. We've seen some things going on at the bottom of the table. Not unfortunately, haven't gone on as we speak. And of course, a few other things that have gone on. I want to talk to Zach about the PSG situation, which is quite interesting. And if there's some lessons to be learned in that. Zach, how you doing, mate?
Hey, Phil. Doing very well. Very excited for today's episode. Very excited as well, because I'm going to be interviewing Thomas Rongen for Zach Lowy's European Football Show. And he's the subject of the upcoming film, Next Goal Wins. Seen that trailer about 100 times, and it has ABBA's Take a Chance on Me as the song. So been into kind of an ABBA binge these past few days, even saw Mamma Mia this weekend. But yeah, really excited for today's show. Let's do this.
Don't tell Roy Keane that. Have you heard the Roy Keane ABBA story?
No, I have not.
So Roy Keane tells a story about when he was in a Sunderland dressing room, and he knew he had the wrong players in the Sunderland dressing room whenever some of the players put ABBA on in the dressing room as the music choice. So don't tell Roy Keane you're an ABBA lover. excellent, actually, if you haven't seen Next Goal Wins, I've seen the trailers for it. It is an absolutely fantastic piece of work, so definitely check that out. And Thomas Rongen is a legitimate legend, total gentleman. So good luck on that. So we'll keep this episode a little bit short, because you got to run, do something far more important, talk to me. we do. Lots of stuff to get through in this half an hour. First of all, mate, I want to talk to you about the incredible scenes at PSG. Because I'm watching Neymar, the protesting outside Neymar's house. Messi, of course, with the unbelievable trip to Saudi Arabia, claiming that he was unaware that he was supposed to be in work that day. Now, of course, talk about him going to Saudi Arabia, whether he should or he shouldn't. Cristiano Ronaldo allegedly wants to leave there. This was supposed to be the dream project. We touched on this a little bit with podcast on with Ollie and Freddie. Supposed to be the dream project with Qatar. Qatar buys PSG. They request Nicolas Sarkozy and Platini. They invest unbelievable amounts of money. Yet the fans, despite the success, domestic success to be fair, and closer to the Champions League than any other time in their, well, certainly in the recent history. What is going wrong here?
Yeah, I think when you look at Paris Saint-Germain, you look at a club that is at a crossroads at the moment. I think that PSG, they have kind of strayed towards more of a star-based approach in recent years. We've seen that with these, high-profile free transfers on veteran players such as Lionel Messi, Sergio Ramos, Jorginho Wijnaldum. So looking for the best players, but not necessarily the best fit. Looking for, frankly, a lot of times looking past Ligue 1, which I think has been a mistake. I think that PSG perhaps thinking that they are too good to scout in Ligue 1 has actually led to a lot of, a disorganized structure. I think that PSG, it's clear that Luis Campos coming in, he wanted to kind of change the structure and focus more on these young and up-and-coming French and Portuguese players. So I do think we're going to see more of that this summer. I think they're going to try to move away from that star-based model and attempt to get rid of Neymar. I would expect this to be the final days of Lionel Messi in the French capital. And in general, try to incorporate more of these talents from the Paris area. I think that's been one of their biggest missteps. And in many ways, I think it's also one of the reasons why this Paris Saint-Germain fan base feels disconnected with regards to this, to their team and to their culture. And I think that in part, we're also seeing PSG's attempts to move to the Stade de France, how that moving away from the historical center of the Parc de France, that's sort of moving away from the club's identity. So, excuse me. One second, Phil. I apologize.
You're of course, man.
Go
ahead. Nasser Khalifa is probably looking for you, my friend, after all the shit you're talking about him on here. But wouldn't surprise me. I think in many ways that there's a lesson to be learned here, because when you're talking about PSG, and there's lots of people are envious of the PSG model, that want that type of money, that want that type of investment at the club, they want those types of people coming in and lavishing millions, hundreds of millions, possibly billions on players, and thinking that this is a fix-all to anyone who's struggling, especially if you're a struggling giant trying to catch your rivals. And I think what it shows is that its core identity matters, and how the football club being run and consistent with its values, because the sugar high of signings wears off fast. And then what are you left with? And if the football club is not run commensurate with its values and its history and its culture, and I'm also thinking a little bit about Manchester United here. Manchester United are a football club that have had a youth team player in the first team squad going back almost years. And most Manchester United fans, certainly of my generation, probably generation before, want to see that continue. And I don't want to see a situation where you have a collection of superstars and then you have to bend the football club to the will. Because even if you get Neymar out, even if you move Messi out, you still have the unbelievable situation of Kylian Mbappe, where PSG, it seems to me, the problem started there. Once they conceded the Mbappe and gave him the keys to the football club, maybe it went before that, but it seems to me it went all downhill from there.
Yeah, I think that the Messi, Neymar, Mbappe trident was always bound to fail. When you look at three of those players who, frankly, do not put in any shifts whatsoever off the ball, who aren't going to, you know, press and keep them, keep the press intense, I think that in general there wasn't enough width there. I think that they phased out Angel Di Maria without considering his impact. They failed to replace him, and I think that's been a big reason for the flailing attack. So yeah, the fact is, Paris Saint-Germain are going to win the Ligue 1 title this year. There's little doubt about that. But I don't think that they are playing the best football in France. I think that Lens are. And I think that PSG fans, frankly, they're accustomed to winning the league. And so, yeah, they're going to see them win another league, not the Coupe de France. But so that is kind of the bare minimum. But when you don't combine that with using these young players, and having a lot of these promising young players go to other clubs, such as Christopher Nkunku and Moussa Diaby. And in general, I think just having a football that is not up to standard, that hasn't been up to standard against Ligue 1's top sides. You know, a lot of people, they just see Paris Saint-Germain's dominance. They think, oh, well, they're just it's been a cakewalk for them. But actually, when you watch the games, you look at the results against teams such as Lens and Lorient, the fact is PSG are not winning these games. They are not playing their brand of football. And I think that's been one of the biggest criticisms leveled at Christophe Galtier. And one of the biggest reasons why I think he could leave. I would still probably expect Luis Campos to remain in charge as sporting director. But yeah, like I said, I think that they are a club that is at a crossroads at the moment. I expect them to move away from these players such as Messi and Neymar, and try to build on Mbappe and try to look at these players in France. But, you know, going back to what you were saying, Phil, yeah, it is so important for any club's fan base to have a player that came through the academy that they can identify with. I know that, you know, from my experience, Porto fans felt that with Vitinha last season, Fabio Vieira. Benfica fans have felt that with, you know, players such as Gonzalo Ramos and Florentino Luis. So I think that what those kinds of players deliver, it's selflessness. It's being comfortable with sitting on the bench for a few games and coming up and doing a shift in a big match. We saw that with, for example, Josip Stanisic for Bayern against Paris Saint-Germain. You know, just a youth player who's a backup fullback. So I think that having these players, what it does is it definitely serves you well in terms of connecting with your fan base, But also it reaps benefits on the pitch, right? These players are going to put in a shift. They're going to really feel the badge. And I think that Paris Saint-Germain fans have noticed that with quite a few players, such as Warren Zaire-Emery. We're talking about a player who was, 16 years old and is doing better than all these players on massive wages, such as Ander Herrera and Jorginho Wijnaldum. And one thing as well, I don't think it's lost on the fact that Paris Saint-Germain came the closest they ever have to finally ending these European ghosts, getting to the Champions League final, getting to the semis another year. Then they had this big blockbuster window where they went out and got Wijnaldum, Messi, Ramos, Hakimi, Nuno Mendes, Donnarumma, I'm probably missing a few, and then got knocked out of the round of 16 2 years in a row. So, yeah, the fact is this season has been an embarrassment, and winning the Ligue 1 title will not change that. This has not been good enough for it. But I think that PSG, what they need to do now is they need to start building towards an identity. Now, it's not easy when, all of your fans are expecting the league as well as expecting you to challenge for the Champions League. Yeah. But what's going to change that is if you have actual results on the pitch, okay? If your supporters can see a free-flowing, fantastic brand of football, because the fact is, Phil, we've seen that with Paris Saint-Germain, but we haven't seen that for a few years, And I think that's been partially a result of chopping and changing managers and having all of these players that, like I said, may be the biggest names, but may not necessarily be the best fit. So you need an identity on and off the pitch, and you need supporters to start feeling like this is more than just a vanity project from a Middle Eastern country.
Mate, I want to ask you about your friend David De Gea, because I know you're a big fan of his, and I know you've always been a big fan of his. I know you've always been someone that said he's the most important player at Manchester United. The paradox of this David De Gea is he's in the running for the Golden Glove. United have a worse defensive record than Chelsea. They've scored the same amount of goals as Leicester, but he's got the most clean sheets in the Premier League. But it seems like every month there's an unbelievable calamitous mistake in him. Not a mistake where you can say, okay, I can see where that would happen. Just a major lapse in concentration that doesn't belong at this level. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, here's the problem for Ten Hag this summer. He has a striker problem that's going to require the vast majority of his budget. How do you also find money for a goalkeeper, Alexis McAllister, a right back, and a striker? But what would you do about David De Gea?
Yeah, I mean, it's everyone like you mentioned, Phil, because the fact is, these past few weeks, while they have been, I think, somewhat surprising for Manchester United, the fact is, this squad is not a squad that's going to be challenging for the title. Okay, there's a good spine there. You've got there's good players there, such as Casemiro, Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes. But the fact is, there are so many holes in this squad. I think that center forward has to be a must. Wout Weghorst and Anthony Martial are simply not good enough for a team that aspires to win silverware in Europe and domestically. So I think that is probably priority number one. But yeah, I'll be honest, Phil. I think that I'm not sure if I'd say priority number two, but a new goalkeeper has to be high up.
Would you go with Diogo Costa?
Would I go with Diogo Costa? I'm a big fan of Diogo Costa. I really like him. And yeah, I think he would improve Manchester United. I think that he's somebody that would definitely fit in better with what Erik ten Hag demands and what is trying to implement at United with this high line. With regards to Costa, yeah, I have been following him for quite a while. He got his breakthrough at the start of last season when Augustin Marquezine missed out due to injury and never lost his grasp on the position. Excuse me. And he's somebody who I think won, I believe, seven Goalkeeper of the Month awards, maybe more than that, Phil. It seems like he wins the award just about every single month. And I think the way to describe Costa is he's what I'd say is a modern goalkeeper. Okay, he's the epitome of a modern goalkeeper. He's somebody who is so comfortable leaving his line and sweeping up danger. And that is something that I think is perhaps one of my biggest criticisms levied at David De Gea. You know, a lot of De Gea's fans, they constantly back him up and just saying, possession in a goalkeeper is not the only thing. But the fact is, you know, so many of De Gea's flaws are not just possession related. They are also with regards to basic goalkeeper instincts, such as coming off the line and, helping your team implement a high line. So I think the fact is, De Gea, a lot of these flaws, they are coming to root more. I think that we have seen so many more uncharacteristic errors of him. And I think you combine that to, you know, not leaving his line, his really poor ability in possession, and also, you know, other stuff such as poor reactions, getting beaten at his near post. And I think that, yeah, the mistake at West Ham, it wasn't, it was far from the only reason why United lost that game, but I think it was definitely one of the biggest ones. And it is becoming harder and harder to justify extending his contract. I think this should be the final year that De Gea is a starter at United. And I think that, you know, in some ways, it's a bit like you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain, because De Gea was one of the few shining lights of the first few post-Ferguson years for United. But the fact is, these errors have started to pop up more and more into his game. I would say especially since his contract renewal. So I think that, yeah, at his age, I believe he's, what, 31? And, you know, I think that it would make a lot more sense for United to go for a new goalkeeper. Maybe Diogo Costa. There's a lot of other up-and-coming goalkeepers in Portugal that I would also look at, such as Andro Ventura of Gil Vicente and Ignacio de Arua Barrena of Arauca. But, yeah, Diogo Costa is definitely a promising goalkeeper who I think would fit in a lot better with Ten Hag's system than De Gea. The fact is, I'm not sure if Costa is the answer. You know, maybe it's someone like Mike Maignan or Andre Onana on the other Milanese club. But I do know one thing. If Manchester United are to push for the title, they need to get rid of this De Gea experiment.
I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
When he came to United, his weaknesses were, first of all, he was young, he was slight, where he was poor on crosses, he was a bit weak, and he had concentration lapses. He never improved on those things. He improved on his strengths. His strengths were he was a very good shot stopper, right? I mean, he was United's player of the year for 5 years in a row during these awful periods, which I think says more about United than it does De Gea. But when I look at De Gea, I see a guy that didn't develop his feet, still poor on crosses. I thought he got very lucky yesterday with that one that was disallowed, because it was really slight contact with Mikel Antonio. Could have been given. He's really poor on penalties, right? I mean, he didn't save any of the Brighton penalties. This was a problem at the World Cup with Spain. This was a problem in the Villarreal penalty shootout in the Europa League final. Didn't save any of them. In fact, he missed the only one that United missed. And I'm going, if I'm a goalkeeper and someone's taking 11 penalties against me, law averages says I should save one. And I was watching him in the League Cup, FA Cup semi-final. He went to the same side every single time, right? And I'm going, I think he's got really good reactions, right, where he's very, very good in certain, but I don't think he's great in terms of concentration. I think he is a goalkeeper that had strength for a previous era when goalkeepers weren't footballers. But today, I think because you need to have so much more as a goalkeeper, because the game has totally changed from when De Gea was breaking through Atletico Madrid, he's just not suited to play that way. I think he would be good in certain teams, maybe a mid-table team that doesn't play from the back, that knocks the ball long, maybe like a Jordan Pickford or someone at Everton would be good at. Same with Maguire. But when you're at the very top, shortcomings get, you can't hide them, and they get shown up every week. And what you see now with De Gea is teams target him. So when the ball gets played back to him, you see him get pressed immediately. They, you know, they'll kick the ball off, they'll play the ball back, and you'll see players on top of him immediately. So the picking on him is a weakness. They know his kicking's a weakness. They know he's poor on crosses. They know he's easy to exploit in some ways. And if you look at the Sevilla goal, he comes out of his box, miscontrols it. Ball goes straight to Sevilla. That's the type of thing that Ederson wouldn't do, the type of thing that Alisson wouldn't do. They make mistakes too, they're human, but not those mistakes.
I just don't know how you look at teams like Real Madrid with Thibaut Courtois, Liverpool with Alisson, Manchester City with Ederson, all of these goalkeepers, Bayern Munich with Manuel Neuer, and just think that United can somehow get to the promised land, get to where they are aiming to be and where they have been aiming towards for the past a decade with David De Gea. These errors are becoming more and more regular. And the fact is the odd reaction save does not justify all of these basic flaws that, like you say, he still has not improved on. So look, Erik ten Hag has done a very good job in his first year at Old Trafford, getting them to two cup finals, getting them silverware, and having them on course to get top four. But the fact is, if he cannot identify these basic flaws in his game and recognize that in order to reach the next level, Manchester United needed a new goalkeeper, then I'm sorry, Erik ten Hag is part of the problem. The fact is, United need to move on from De Gea. They have needed to for quite some time. This has been a long time coming, and the fact is, I think that there is absolutely no reason for United to be even considering renewing his contract.
I think that is a really fair analysis. I want to ask you, because one of the most pleasing sights last week that I saw was Naples being lit up. This was a coronation last week that I really wanted to see. Was magnificent. It was great to see. 33 years, I believe, is how long it's been since they last won it. I was thinking about how much Maradona would have loved to have been around for this. But you wrote an article on your website, which was quite interesting, about one of your contributors did, Victor Osimhen. 47 goals, best return from an African player since George Weah. He's going to be a young man in demand. And Aurelio De Laurentiis has already said he will not sell him this summer. Tell me where you rate Osimhen in relation to the best African strikers, such as George Weah. And do you think he should leave Napoli this summer?
Ooh, two really tricky questions. I definitely hope that he doesn't leave Napoli this summer, because this has been absolutely magical, winning their first league title in 33 years and doing it in stunning fashion. The fact is, we've pretty much known that Napoli were going to win the Scudetto since October, and Osimhen has been, has been a very important part of that. Obviously missed a little bit at the start of the season due to injury, but is a player who has really enjoyed a meteoric rise. Had a fantastic U-17 World Cup with Nigeria and won the trophy. Got a move to Wolfsburg, but couldn't really develop there, and was really struggling with malaria. And
I remember you saying that's incredible. That's an unbelievable story.
His body had been weakened so much by malaria that two Belgian clubs did not take a chance on him. Ended up going to Charleroi and having a great season there and earning a move to Lille, where he replaced Rafael Leao. And had a phenomenal year in Lille in the year that was obviously abruptly cut short by COVID. But earned a move to Napoli, and despite some injuries, has really been able to capitalize on his world-class potential. And I think that he's somebody who just offers, in many ways, I think similarly to what Romelu Lukaku did for Inter when they won their Scudetto, just an unstoppable physical presence, but so much more than that. Somebody who is a constant worker off the ball, constantly pressing and trying to win back possession, and somebody who is so fearless in aerial duels and using his chest to control long balls. So yeah, in many ways, he's a really like a magnet who can hold up the ball and link up with Gwisha Kuraskelia, Piotr Zielinski, and his other attacking teammates. So vital. I think that while I think he should stay at Napoli, I think there's a good chance that he does leave. I think that so many teams will be interested in him. Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, they desperately need
him.
And I think that this season, you know, even if they do win the league, it has definitely shown that not having a replacement for Robert Lewandowski has cost them dearly. They need somebody with his clinical finishing ability and overall just his target man presence. So I think that Bayern, PSG, as well as probably Manchester United and Chelsea, I'd imagine that they are in the conversation for him. So this is somebody who's going to be having a ton of interest. And I think that, yeah, I'm not sure where I would put him amongst the greatest.
Who would you compare him to? Would you compare him to a Drogba or someone like that?
So there are definitely some aspects of Drogba that I would definitely liken to his game. Some aspects of, for example, Samuel Eto'o as well. But yeah, with regards to Drogba, I think that his aerial ability, there are definitely some similarities. So good in not just you know getting a header onto a cross or a throw-in, but also defending set-piece situations. But also, one thing that really comes to mind in terms of these Drogba links is, for me, one thing that made Drogba such a phenomenal striker is his ability to just come alive in big games. And I think that's something that we see a lot of with Osimhen. He's somebody who steps up when the biggest occasion comes. We saw that, you know, getting the goal to get the draw against Udinese and secure the title, as well as getting the goal in the following match against Fiorentina. He's just somebody who just dominates and makes his presence known. So, yeah, I have no doubt that he is one of the best strikers in world football at the moment. I would say alongside Robert Lewandowski, Karim Benzema, Harry Kane, and Erling Haaland. He's just so lethal, and Napoli are going to be very lucky if they can hold on to him for another year.
Yeah, those players are in demand, Zach. There isn't many of them about, and big clubs will come chasing him with big, big money. Listen, mate, I know you have to run, but you got a big interview coming up. We've got a couple of things I want to work on. Hopefully next week, one of the guests that I want to bring on to the show is a guy called Nick Harris, a fantastic journalist. And one of the things I always want to look into is the steadfast refusal of the FA to properly do doping testing, drug testing, which of course, there's a tremendous thread on Nick's Twitter feed that I highly suggest you check out. I'd like to dig into this a little more. A few other guests through the week, so stay tuned. Go enjoy your interview with Thomas Rongan, mate, and we'll be back again later on in the week. Take it easy, brother. Bye, mate.